Welcome to this ILTA podcast on emerging roles in legal, where I'll be speaking with thought leaders about shifts in our industry and the new roles that are emerging to meet these new demands. I'm Amy Onahan, Senior Practice Innovations Manager at Perkins Coie, and joining me today is Jason Barnwell, Assistant General Counsel, Modern Legal at Microsoft. Thank you, Jason, for joining me.
My pleasure.
So you have a very interesting title and a very interesting role. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Happy to. The short version of what I do is think about how the Microsoft Corporate External and Legal Affairs Department can take advantage of technology to advance how we practice law and how we serve Microsoft. And it's, I would say, a delightful role because in many ways, we get to build the plane while we're flying it. And so I think it would be overly simplistic to say that it is squarely focused on technology because it really is about the application of technology to our work. So it requires going deep on what is the work that matters. So the actual things that we must do to advance the business of Microsoft. But it also starts to bring in a lot of the cultural elements that are necessary to create the conditions for adoption and success. And it's only after we figured out what are the things that we should be doing and how can we actually get those to land that we then start thinking about, all right, if we're going to make this scale and if we're going to make this go faster and if we're going to make it more efficient and if we're going to make it smarter with technology, then we apply that. So it very much is that people, process, tools kind of flow that people talk about, and it's critical to success.
And how did you get to this role? What has your path been? What are the skills that you've developed along the way to make you successful in your current role?
Well, I'm going to go a little bit in reverse and then try to be as linear as I can. But if I was going to identify the one, I don't know if it's a skill or a trait, but if there's one feature that I look back on that has really helped me, it's the willingness to ask stupid questions and to be unafraid and saying, I don't understand that. Can you explain it to me? So my path, I started off as a software engineer and went to law school, and then I became a startup lawyer. And then a little under a decade ago, I joined Microsoft as a product lawyer, which is a role that involves, counseling of a general nature for a product group. And then I had additional responsibilities layered in on top of that, where I led the open source team. So I had both a vertical role in as much as I was specifically responsible for a business in the developer division back then. And I had a horizontal role leading a specialty practice. And then I think one of my mentors came to me and was like, hey, so there's a job over there. We've never had one quite like that before. You know, it's not fully defined. We're not really sure what success looks like. Any interest? And I'm like, absolutely.
He said, sign me up.
Sign me up. And so that was really how I got into what I would call the business of law, because it was leading our law firm engagement strategy. And then some other responsibilities were layered on top of that to bring in legal operations. And then about a half a year ago, we decided to spin me off into Modern Legal so I can really focus on innovation. And we have a small team that tries to be the catalyst for our department.
Mm-hmm. So this podcast focuses on emerging roles in legal, and you know, in hearing your path to your current role, you have a trait where you aren't afraid to ask stupid questions. We'll just say questions because there's no stupid questions, right? And I also am picking up on tones of entrepreneurship, you know, the willingness to venture into the unknown happily and figure it out. Those are not characteristics, the typical characteristics of attorneys, right? The attorney population tends to be a little bit more risk averse. They would like to know what's ahead of them before stepping in. So for these emerging roles that are coming out of these shifts in the legal industry, you know, how are you able to kind of tailor your skill set to meet those? And what do you see the attorney population needing to do to kind of meet these new demands and craft their new skill sets to meet them?
I think you have a strong observation there, and I see that correlation as well. And if you look at some of the standard patterns for the attorney discipline, they are built for the past, not the future. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, this is specifically what I mean. If in the old realm, you would go to law school and you would get a generalized set of capabilities, but really the nature of the practice was you were going to keep getting narrower and narrower and narrower. Mm-hmm. And you might have to learn some things that were incremental for your practice within that narrowing kind of cone, but you weren't really going to have to learn like big other different things. That was the old way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not convinced that is the future of things. And so if you look at the most interesting work that is happening in our field and the ability to create more value on top of that, one of the standard traits I'm starting to see is it involves a lot of intersectionality, in as much as you basically are being the bridge across two things that historically haven't always had a lot of expertise intersections. So for example, healthcare and law. Now, there've always been, you know, people who did healthcare law, but one of the really interesting places where you're seeing just kind of new things emerge is the productization of what are effectively solutions that impinge on the healthcare arena, mm-hmm. that don't look like an x-ray machine, right? And so now it's requiring people to really get mastery in different domains. Mm-hmm. And it requires radical shifts in really your thinking and your skill set. And we saw something like that happen in the product world, the product counseling world several years ago. So when I showed up at Microsoft, the first job I got, they again, it's a pattern maybe, they offered me two roles. They're like, okay, we've got one, which is a little bit more conventional. It has some commercial aspects. It's got, but like, you know, we know more or less the shape of it. And we have this other job, and there's basically these people creating this product that we don't understand. We don't know what it does. And it turns out what a portion of the data platform group was creating what we would now call a big data cloud service built on open source software, which now people feel fairly comfortable saying those words and they have some sense of what those mean. But back then, these were new words, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're like, so we're not really sure what they're doing over there, but we need to send like a ranger out into the back country to try to keep blood out of the streets, right? Like, because and so that was one of the first jobs that I took, and it ended up being this really great opportunity for me to flex on both the legal skills I had, but also it was deeply technical work, right? So they were bringing in these open source packages that did some really, really interesting stuff. You know, it was all Apache. It was a bunch of Hadoop ecosystem things. And it was deployed on, you know, this cloud infrastructure, which now, again, we take for granted, but they're like mm-hmm. figuring out this. And it was all these things that were new, but it really was the intersection of these things that, you know, hadn't historically, you had to know kind of maybe the licensing piece, mm-hmm. but you had to know less about like how these things actually work. Like you could just kind of abstract it far enough away, but like, like little this, little that. Mm-hmm. And then, so it was interesting because we saw this pivot happen a few years later where we really did see a change in our business where it moved from fully packaged product, where you're effectively building monolithic programs, you're flashing them onto, you know, chunks of plastic and aluminum and disks, and you're sending them out or you're downloading them. And it moved to the services model. And when you are in the services model, the things you really start caring about are basically the sanctity and security of data. And so then what happens is you start to become like a cybersecurity and a privacy attorney. Mm-hmm. And it was this thing that kind of happened underneath us. And so then we all, you know, went and got skilled up. And that is, I think, what makes our work fun. Mm-hmm. When the field of play keeps changing. And going back to where I started, because I'm sorry I'm rambling a bit, but I hope the story is somewhat instructive. It used to be that you could think that the serviceable life of a fundamental unit of your knowledge might be 10 or 20 or 30 years. And now I'm just not so sure. I think that the dynamism of the world in which we operate, you know, the volatility, the uncertainty, the complexity, the ambiguity, it really requires us to always be learning and acquiring new skill sets. But the great thing is it makes our job and our work more interesting, because as you start acquiring these complementary skills, it gives you the ability to fashion new solutions, new tools to see the world in different ways. And I think in the end, you know, that makes for far more interesting and fulfilling work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So how do you continue to evolve your skill set?
Well, there's a couple approaches. One is to always take jobs that you're completely unqualified for. There is nothing, nothing that, like, the anxiety of, like, oh my goodness, I raised my hand for this and now I have to go do this job and try to not be awful at it. You know, that could be a very constructive anxiety where it forces you to go learn and it forces you to go run at it really fast.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is why you and I get along.
So Amy is like super fun to do projects with, because you'll basically say, hey, I've got this crazy idea. You want to? Yes, let's go do it.
And you had me at crazy. Let's do it.
So I think being willing to take the leap is really helpful. But the other thing that, again, going back to some of the archetypes of lawyers that I think get in our way, is we're often so fixated on our time being so precious, we rarely will go learn things that might have speculative value, right? And so we're like, oh, I'll take the CLE if one, I get credit, and two, it's related to my practice. But I'm not sure I'm going to go learn how to automate a document, because I'm not sure how I'm ever going to apply that. And now, you can't be totally ridiculous about these things, but there's a thing that I do, which is I try to observe the repetitious work and tasks in my practice, and then I log those. I have a little kind of mental scoreboard that's like, okay, so how many times did I go do that exact same thing? Oh, and at a certain point, I start saying, this is an opportunity for me to go take one of the things off the shelf, you know, whether it's an automation tool or what have, but something to go play with. It's like, maybe I can make this a little bit better. And if you are always kind of hobbying, if you've always got something on simmer that you're like, I want to stir that pot, then it keeps you engaged. And the other thing you realize is, the stuff that you bring off the shelf, it often ends up being very complementary, in as much as you can fashion those things together to create new valuable solutions, approaches, techniques. And if you start building that as a habit, like, I am just going to set aside a certain amount of my time to do kind of a little bit of blue sky kind of thinking about problems that exist, then it just becomes a habit. And that's ultimately where you want to get to with anything that you want to be sustained, because if it requires willpower, then there's a good chance you may not do it on a consistent basis. But when it becomes a habit, when it becomes a systematic approach to how you solve problems and how you do, then you will keep making time for it.
Mm-hmm. So do you see a difference in the emerging roles and the subsequent skill sets needed to fill those roles between the firm approach, so attorneys that go to law firms, and attorneys who go in-house, like you did with Microsoft? Where is the differentiating sort of emergence of new roles and the skills that are going to be required to meet them? But then also, what are the commonalities?
So I think there ultimately is more commonality on the things that need to be done from a technical standpoint, because the work is the work. And if we're honest, I mean, you know, it's knowledge work. And so the building blocks of it, whether you're operating on one side of the fence or the other, are more common than they are different. However, the thing that I observe is it's always interesting to think about, like, the gravity of a system. And by that, I mean, in what direction does the primary animating force pull us? And when you are doing, and again, I'm going to reveal that I'm I'm not sure. I have not been in private practice for about a decade. So I realize that, you know, what I'm saying may be completely outmoded. But when I look back on my practice when I was at the firm, everything I did was reactive. Mm-hmm. Somebody had to show up with a need, and then I could execute on it. Now, of course, I was not actually constrained in that way, and I built all kinds of tools and fun stuff for myself because go see my comments. So,
yes.
but as a general matter, you know, I felt like I had less agency about making the world different because I was only acting on the bigger pieces when something showed up. Now, that is a bit different when you are in-house, in as much as you have, I think, a bit more room to look at the strategic direction of your business and say, well, knowing where we're going to go, these are some investments that I think we should make. And if you can make those in a way that justifies the investment, then I have found that, you know, our leaders are very open. If we make a you know, a hypothesis where we say, look, you know, the transaction volume for this, if, you know, we believe these projections are going to go to X, and the way that we're currently doing this is built so that it we actually don't have diminishing, you know, incremental cost against this, then eventually we're going to hit a wall. Like, we can't just keep throwing more bodies at this problem. Mm-hmm. Should we take the time to go rethink this? And then when you make that reasoned argument, they'll often say, like, yeah, that seems like a totally rational investment. Please go do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that the thing I perceive is that because of just the physics of the realm where the gravity is, we have a bit more agency to do that. Now, I'm curious, I'm going to throw it back on you. Like, does my analysis, like, does that hold water or does that feel off?
No, I think that's accurate. Definitely historically so. I think firms are finally starting to trend towards the upfront investment costs and finding ways to make things more efficient and invest in innovation. But I do think that, you know, law firms especially the larger ones for the longest time, our strong suit has been, we have the bodies. We have the bodies that we can throw at problems, and we have, you know, really smart, really expensive bodies that we can throw at problems. So no, I think you're dead on. We're seeing a shift. It's a slow shift. You know, it's not as fast as some of us would like for it to be. But, you know, where I see the advantage to being in a position like yourself or in-house is that your mandate is to spend time on that upfront investment to find the things that are going to be of value to the company. On the law firm side, there is certainly interest and support for that upfront investment, but we have to balance that with the business of the law firm as well. So in some respects, it can be it can take us more time, and it can be a little bit more of an uphill battle because we're all constrained by resources, right?
So I have a follow-up question. So as somebody who needs people like you to be empowered, what can I do to change the gravity well a little bit in your realm so that you can better serve us as your customers?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think in a lot of ways you do it, right? You're definitely a thought leader in our industry. You speak, you write about these topics. You're very transparent. You're very open. You've come and spoken to many of our partners. You know, I think that I'm actually, you know, I'm in one of the better positions in order to be able to meet these new, you know, needs that you as a client have. I would say that the industry as a whole, we actually need more clients like you saying these things. We need more clients saying that here, we want you to innovate, but this is what we mean by innovate. We don't mean throw AI at problems that AI is not meant to solve. That's not what we're talking about, right? What we're talking about when we mean innovation is that we want less friction when we engage with you. We want a consistent experience when we engage with you. We want consistent data when we engage with you, right? So we need more clients like yourself stepping up and saying, this is what we mean when we say we want our law firms to innovate. And then also time. Again, you know, you and Microsoft have been very generous with your time in tinkering and trying some things out. You know, hey, I got a crazy idea. You want to come work on that? That's great. If we could you know, incite that across the entire client base, I think that we will make leaps and bounds in shifting the industry.
Well, I hope we get there because we need the help.
Absolutely.
Very selfishly.
Absolutely. Well, and I will say that, you know, you're a member of CLOC. You are very, very vocal in that forum. And I think that that should serve as a good resource for folks in this realm so that they can go and see the types of ideas that are being talked about. And that could be one way to empower others to start talking about these, both, you know, internal within their own organizations, but also with outside counsel. Sometimes it's a pretty difficult conversation to have with your firm. You know, hey, I need you to change the way that you're doing things because right now it's not benefiting me. That can be a tricky conversation on both sides.
Yeah, and I'll just offer that there's a lot of our folks who they really don't feel comfortable doing that because mm-hmm. we are so relational. And so I find this really unfortunate. So in the law firm engagement strategy role, I ended up being the person who would often have these like super awkward conversations, which was easy for me because I'm already kind of naturally awkward. So I was like, it's just my normal operating mode. But the thing that I always kept in the back of my mind that made it easier for me to walk forward is sometimes I'm delivering a message that may not feel great.
Mm-hmm.
However, I do this with the goal of setting up my partner up for success. And I think, you know, if our roles were reversed, is this something that I would want to know?
Right.
Or would I want to keep continuing under a bunch of false assumptions? And I keep going back to like, no, I would, I mean, even if there's going to be an initial like, oh man, this doesn't feel good. It's better than what right. happens if it's allowed to continue being bad. And then eventually it's like,
absolutely.
Yeah, this relationship is no longer there.
Right.
So, yeah,
right.
But I think you've offered a good point.
Right. It reminds me of a cartoon that I've used in presentations. It's two dinosaurs and they're just, you know, happily eating tree leaves. And one says, looking up, like, huh, what's that? And the other one looks up, like, I don't know. Shouldn't be anything big, you know, and obviously it's the asteroid.
Right.
So you would think that people would want a heads up like, hey, something big's happening and I need you to be a part of it rather than just, you know, they get decimated by an asteroid.
that's really interesting because I'm not saying there's an asteroid coming. That I'm not going to be hyperbolic like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that there are fundamental changes coming to our industry that are going to bring more discipline to the process by which we do work. And if I look historically at how legal work happening across organizational boundaries has been done, mm-hmm. it's been very bundled. And so, you know, and it was for the convenience of us as the customer. And what we would do is we would come to you as outside counsel and we'd basically say, like, I have this problem. Mm-hmm. And the problem was a mishmash of things that require really, really, you know, highly educated, you know, super crafts people and a bunch of other stuff, some of which was, you know, kind of process and some of it, which was just literally just kind of program management and things that are immensely valuable,
mm-hmm.
but were not intrinsically within the sweet spot of where law firms provide differentiated services.
Mm-hmm.
And I suspect that over the next half decade or so, what the customers will start doing is we will start changing the way that we do that work internally so that we will have greater facility to split that into pieces and send it to the partners who represent the right, you know, the right partner for the work. And we're already starting to see this, right? So if you think about, you know, how we partner with organizations that, you know, ALSPs and other types of organizations, that has already happened for some of our volume work.
Mm-hmm.
But it hasn't really gone into as much of the, let's just call it the bread and butter general counseling work thus far, in large part because I don't think we've had good classification systems. We haven't had, you know, as much, we haven't had mechanisms that help us structure the intake process that comes from our internal customers and things like that. But as we start building more infrastructure that gives us the ability to really identify things, classify them, and then send them to the right, you know, kind of resource, it's going to fundamentally change the resourcing model that happens downstream. And the thing I would offer to law firms is you can be reactive to that, or you can be part of the co-creation process. And there is some risk in as much as that there could be some cannibalization that happens as you, as an outside counsel firm, you know, say like, well, we have identified that this work has a 20-80 split between really weird stuff that we haven't seen before and 80% of the things that, you know, you've asked us for this 100 times before. But that also creates a completely different opportunity if you're willing to change up your resource model to not just be, you know, how much wakeful human attention is applied to this. If you're willing to make investments that are creative and that go and that build on different business models, this ends up being something that could be very, very special for the firms. My concern is this: to do that, you need AMIs, and you need AMIs to have direct contact with the problems. I will say this loudly and proudly. If you're filtering all of these opportunities only through the attorneys, solutions will not emerge because it is their nature to basically say, oh, no, this is different. And they, as a general matter, they will not create those new things for you. And so if you're not bringing your allied professionals, the technical folks, the business folks, directly into the engagement with direct client contact, you will not succeed. You will not innovate, and you will not create a seat for yourself on the boats that are going to leave at some point in the future.
Yep.
Rant complete.
Yep. Well, I completely agree with your rant. Well, it's a function of language, right? So I'd say I'm multilingual. I understand technology, you know, not by any formal training, it's because I do this and I'm curious in it. But I also speak legal because I'm trained as an attorney. And so, you know, because of this multilingualness of folks like myself, that is why direct access to the problem is really important, because we can serve as that translator and the designer for solving those problems. So I wanted to go back. So I completely agree with you that it's not necessary that there's a huge asteroid headed towards legal, right? But I do think that we are seeing tremendous shifts in the industry, unbundling, as you were talking about, being certainly one of them. What are some of the other, you know, kind of big shifts that are going on underground right now that you see emerging coming up that are going to require these new types of skills in order to work with them and be successful in sort of like designing for them?
So one thing that I suspect will emerge, because technology is getting better, let me try to make this as linear as possible. So we are seeing the rise of some very powerful tools that come from the technology space that will allow machines to provide humans with more support without the humans having to change how they work. So specifically, you're going to start seeing more machine learning powered services that can reason over the signal that humans emit, like communications. So you'll be able to reason over the emails we send and the messages we send on Teams and so forth and so on. And here's where I think this ultimately gets interesting. So the first jump that will happen from that is we'll start to get more support, which is going to be fabulous, because that's going to allow humans to spend more of their time doing human things, and less time doing the kind of routine things. But the other thing that's going to happen next is we're going to get more data that tells us about what's actually happening in the work. And that's going to be interesting, because then we can plan better. And again, we can do the human things that we do as humans even better. But here's where I suspect it goes after that. And I don't think that as a general matter, we are quite skilled for this yet. After you start having data, if you really want to be data driven, you need to start running experiments. Mm-hmm. And that's one of these things that I find so interesting. People are like, oh, well, being data driven is dashboards. I'm like, eh. Being data driven means you do things, you get signal, and then you change your behavior in a somewhat using the scientific method. Mm-hmm. And so that's a gap that I don't see a lot of people talking about that much. That should eventually, it'll start off in kind of the operations space where you have people who do this at, kind of at scale. But ultimately, it would not surprise me if there is a certain number of attorneys who, for whatever reason, either by curiosity or by background, they start becoming architects for experiments that result in some really different approaches to how we do work. And so that's one of those things that feels like a natural outcome. I'm not sure how long it takes us to get there, but that feels like a path that we've started walking on, and I'm not sure if people perceive that yet.
And in your role as modern legal, can you talk a little bit about the current makeup of your team, but then also, you know, what are you thinking about in terms of your staffing model, you know, 3, 5, 10 years out?
So my goal is always to become obsolete. And our team, and apparently I'm really good at it, our team is pretty small. So it's just, there's just three of us, including myself. And so we have a person who we call her title cultural systems engineer. And she really is thinking about how we build the innovation machine. Mm-hmm. So how do we systematically harvest great ideas? How do we turn those into prioritized set of things that we go after? How do we put those into a construction system? How do we measure the outcomes? And then how do we get smarter about that, right? Mm-hmm. And again, we call her a cultural systems engineer because it's not just about build from a technical standpoint. It is about building up the capabilities of our people so that they can perceive this is a challenge I'm having. There might be some ways to go after this. And we're not asking everybody to become a deep technologist. That is not the goal. Mm-hmm. It is to get them enough facility to spot like, here's an opportunity that I should bring to people who can help me turn this into something that can create value. So that is one of our roles. The other role we refer to as a storyteller. And it really is somebody who is focused on how do we create communications that help us, you know, understand the value that's being created, that help people understand their place in the journey. And ultimately, one of the goals is going to be to influence the market so that people see that there is a path and that we're on it. And that if people want to join us, they can. And then there's me. I'm like the carnival barker, cheerleader. But I have a lot of I wear a lot of hats. So some days I'm in Power Automate doing technical build. Mm-hmm. Some days, I'm putting together a deck to help communicate and give a sense of where I think we're going in the future. Some days I'm basically talking somebody up saying like, isn't this fabulous, to make sure that, you know, people perceive the value of the investment that person made. So I don't, no, I'm a bit of a platypus, and as is our team, but the goal is for us to become catalysts. Mm-hmm. So our corporate external legal affairs, we have this amazing organization that has all these capabilities. Mm-hmm. And so our role is to really think about how we can activate the potential that already exists and make that something that happens at scale. Because our organization has a lot of resources. And so in many ways, what we're trying to do is just help get those pointed in a slightly different direction a little bit faster so that we can be even more effective.
And so what advice, let's say that, you know, I'm a practicing attorney, I am a partner at a firm, and I came to you and I was like, you know, Jason, I'm seeing these shifts happening in the industry, and you know, I consider myself innovative, you know, but I don't really know what I should be doing. What should I be doing? What should I be doing to help, you know, set myself up so that I can continue to be successful in legal? What advice would you give them?
I don't know that I have any advice, but I will reflect upon my experience, which was from pretty much day one at Microsoft, I have felt empowered to go find interesting problems, even if they were not squarely within my day job, and try to make them better. Now, to be clear, it's not about going and like doing other people's jobs, mm-hmm. because they already have jobs and maybe they don't need your help. But it turns out that business presents a candy store of broken things. Mm-hmm. And so that means that there's an opportunity to go work on something that you think is meritorious that nobody else is attending to. And that's what creates the opportunity to go experiment and to start showing people, you know, well, at first it starts off with showing yourself that you can do something. But after you create a credible outcome, if you tell the story of that, then it starts to give people a view on your capabilities that goes beyond what they might have expected. And the other thing, going back to I'll use the word used, if you're entrepreneurial about that, then what you do is you create opportunities for yourself that operate on your schedule, not somebody else's schedule. Because if you are going to adhere to a conventional approach, which is I either ask for opportunity or I wait for opportunity, then you only get to progress as fast as those materialize, which is often not within your discretion or control. And so if you want to learn faster, if you want to acquire skills faster, if you want to grow faster, if you want to go make the future that you want to be in, I think the easiest way to do that is to go find a problem and try to solve it, and then bring other people along on the journey. And, you know, teach them and empower them and show them, realizing that you, and this is the thing that there is a trait of attorneys specifically that I think gets us into a lot of trouble, which is, you know, we often feel like we have to have the answers to everything. And one thing that that Brad Smith says all the time that I think I latched onto long ago was, you know, a lot of times, your real value is not necessarily providing the answer. It's just asking a really good question, one that starts a conversation and that brings people in. And if you're willing to be, vulnerable and admit, like, I don't have the answer, but I think this is a question that has real merit behind it, and you're willing to go do the work to get smarter on it, then I think that that creates an opportunity that is inclusive and brings other people along. And when you do that, then you start learning faster because other people will teach you. And so it is. And so this is where I think that there's this weird paradox that in the desire to be seen as experts and capable and smart, what we really do is slow down the acquisition of additional capabilities because we effectively wall ourselves off from the experiences that would show others their opportunity to help us and make us smarter. And so I'd say if people want to speed up the process that you're talking about, you know, do the counterintuitive thing and reveal that, you know, there's something that I want to go do that I think is really interesting, but I may not know how to get there and I'd love to have some help.
So being more mindful and in some respects slowing down in order to leave space for that mindfulness, right? That's what I'm getting.
I think so. I mean, it's people, and the other thing, you know, people are so fixated on outcomes, which are important. And I never let it be said, outcomes are important. But if you really want to look at, you know, did somebody do a good job? Look at the process, because many outcomes are a function of random things that are not in someone's control. And if you're rewarding outcomes without understanding the process by which you got there, then there's a lot of other challenge, like moral hazard starts to appear and all kinds of other stuff. And so one of the things that I look at when I'm trying to figure out, like, do I feel good about this? It's I do care about the outcome, to be sure. But I really do try to examine the process, because once I understand that somebody has good process capability on how to do something, that tells me I don't really need to provide much oversight to get good outcomes in the future. I may need to coach them, teach them all that goodness, but, you know, that's how you get to trust. If you can examine, like, this is how you got there and you feel good about that, then that creates goodness.
I think that this is a great place to end our conversation. That creates goodness.
Super.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me today, Jason. I really appreciate our conversation.
It was my absolute pleasure, and I have lots of other crazy ideas for us to go after, and it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
I am ready and will be in line for the ride.